your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Sunday night, May 4th, 2025, as we bring you this show. May the 4th be with you always. On Star Wars Day, the Chicago White Sox were down 4-0 against the Houston Astros. Typically, these games quickly become laughers for the White Sox, but not this time, as the White Sox stormed back in thanks of a dropped fly ball by an Astros outfielder to win 5-4 as Mother Nature provided an assist in ending the game early because of rain. That means the White Sox won another series, and they are 10-24 on the season, but 3-1 in the month of May thanks to finally scoring some more runs. The White Sox scored a total of 15 runs over three games against the Astros, and our beat reporter James Fegan was able to chat with White Sox hitting coach Marcus Thames. Starting with Luis Robert Jr., who's hitting .259 with a .394 on base percentage and slugging .519 in his last 15 games, Thames is wanting Robert to relax and try to stay his athletic self.
Luis was trying to have fun, man. Like, sometimes I just told him this in Boston, sometimes we can get in his way. He's such a good athlete. And sometimes you say, hey, don't chase, don't swing at this, don't swing at that. And then he becomes non-athletic, and he's one of the most athletic guys in the league. And now we just tell him to just have fun. Just go out and have fun and be yourself. And he'll come back to be that guy that we think he can be. And he's been taking some pitches, and I think that's great. He's been getting something called on that's been borderline. But I applaud him because we don't want him chasing out of zone. So I just think he's doing a great job of sticking with his game plan. Now he's having fun. And it's good to see him have a smile on his face because he's one of the most talented guys in the league. So it's good that he's starting to trend in the right direction.
James wrote an excellent column about Miguel Vargas's adjustments on SoxMachine.com. Definitely check that out as it details how the White Sox used biomechanics to discover a critical flaw in Vargas's swing. But Thames is impressed by Vargas's work ethic and willingness to make changes.
It's been good, man. It started even in spring training. Even last year at the end of the season, like, we sent him home with a lot of different drills and stuff just to see what he liked, and kind of spring training and just, you know, to see what was going to go on with him. And then didn't have success right away, but we just kept pounding. We didn't stop working and just kept giving him different things. And kudos to him. He put in the work. You know, I always give all of the players all the credit because they have to want and they have to work. And he's really been putting in the work, and it's good to see him have some confidence, you know, after last year getting beat up a little bit, you know, and coming over in a big trade and wanting to do well. He's a good kid. I know a lot of the guys with the Dodgers, but he's a good kid and he cares. And kudos to him for coming out and working hard and starting to see some really good results and seeing that smile that he's always had, even when he was in the Dodgers organization. So it's good for him to be going in the right direction. I mean, he's a big kid, but if he's not in the right position, you're not going to see it. So now he's getting in the right position. So now you're seeing the power come out. So we can keep him there. And you know, we just talked to him about hitting the ball hard. You know, that's it. We don't want him to hit it far. Just hit it hard, be consistent. But that all starts with being on time and being in a good position. So I think he's doing a great job at that.
Chase Mydroth only has one extra base hit on the season, but is batting .275 with a .408 on base percentage with more walks than strikeouts. Tim shared what he told Mydroth after being cut in spring training and what he likes about his hitting approach.
Spring training, like, when he left to go out, we just told him to be a little bit more aggressive. In spring training, he was taking a lot of pitches, and at the big league level, you can't get behind a lot, you know. So, but he took that down to Charlotte and applied it in his game, and his approach has been solid since he's been here. He knows what he's doing, knows what he's trying to do, and he's been great. Great leadoff guy, sees a lot of pitches, come back and tell the guys what he's seeing. So, so far, so good. Whenever you lead the minor leagues in walks, man, you're doing something. And I think he does well with his scouting reports and stuff like that. And he'll come back in a dugout and say, hey, Marcus, the ball isn't doing this or isn't doing that. So wise among his years. So he's doing a great job.
Edgar Caro provided the game-winning hit on Sunday. First, Caro said post-game how much he enjoys batting in those moments with the game on the line.
It was really good, man. I was focused. Rover was in first when he got a steal. You know, I was trying to get the ball, trying to hit the ball to the middle of the field. Especially with the guy throwing a lot of breaking balls. I just put the ball in play. I've been in these moments a couple of times in my career in minor leagues. I'm that guy. Like, I like to be in those moments. You know, sometimes I'm going to be good. Sometimes I'm going to maybe don't do the job. But, you know, I'm not scared of being in those moments. I like those moments.
Timms has worked with Caro for several years, back to their time with the Los Angeles Angels. He loves that no matter how high a leverage a moment gets, Caro remains calm.
He's always been the same, man. His heartbeat is so slow and nothing speeds up on him. And he's kind of like my drop. He's pretty wise among his years. And he's going to give you a good AB. You know, he's not going to chase much. He knows the zone. He's not going to try to do too much. And he make adjustments right away off of a pitcher. So he was doing that in AAA, and I mean, AA, AAA, and even now up here. So he just need more at bats. You know, he's a young kid. He just need more trips, but he's doing a great job.
The White Sox have been desperate to have better on base hitters. Shoot, we've been advocating and praying for those types of hitters on this podcast for more than a decade. Even though Mydroth and Caro are not providing much power, they have been good at table setters. Tim shared that plate discipline sometimes comes natural for hitters like Mydroth and Caro.
Some guys just have it, and I think he's always been that way, and Chase has always been that way, but we can still try to, you know, find some of the small things to make sure, like, when pitchers are attacking them in certain ways to try to help with that. But majority of the time, when guys taking pitches like that, it's just in them.
Jim Margulis is on vacation, so joining me is Sox Machine's beat reporter, James Feegan. And hello, James. Thank you so much for getting those audio clips for us at the beginning part of the podcast. The Chicago White Sox surprise us. They win a series this weekend. They came from behind when they were down 4-0 on Sunday. Mother Nature helped out with the save. And again, the White Sox won on Friday, 7-3. They lost on Saturday, even though they had a 3-0 lead against Lance McCullers in the first inning. They lost 8-3. But Edgar Caro, James, had the big moment. And as he mentioned in the intro, he's pretty confident in these moments. He wants to be at the plate when the big moment in the game is happening. How confident are the White Sox with Caro in the role that he currently serves in the lineup?
I don't think it's ideal. I think they're very confident in Edgar, and that's why he's batting cleanup. Like, they're very happy with where he's at offensively, obviously, for the stage of development. Like, would they ideally have, you know, their guy who's less than 20 games in such a big role? No, that kind of reflects like Vaughn struggling. I would have thought maybe Drury would be a factor on the team, you know, before he broke his thumb. You could have seen visions of where they had a more filled out middle of the order than when they didn't have to put this in. Certainly Tauchman or Slater, like, being a good platoon matchup would certainly help. Benintendi left a game today, and certainly that won't be a positive thing. But the thing that they constantly kind of heap praise on for Edgar is just being very confident, being very self-assured. I think Jim talked about watching him take at bats, like, he was always like took pitches like looking like he wasn't in doubt on his decisions. And he's kind of always had a very self-assured bravado to him. So I think he's, as much as, yes, he's kind of over-assigned to be batting cleanup for any major league lineup so young into his career, it's not something they think is going to affect his results in some way where he's rattled by it or presses because he's got to produce in this role. He's a chill guy. He doesn't seem overwhelmed by anything I've seen him fired up when he's making big results, but otherwise he's a very even-keeled individual.
Follow up on Andrew Benintendi. You mentioned that he left the game due to calf soreness. Any further updates on Benintendi's status?
Just that he was day-to-day. Venable kind of mentioned the conditions nudging a little bit to pull him more. He said he kind of felt it going when he came out of the box in that fifth inning pop-up. Like, it did seem kind of weird when the ball clanged off DeZenzo's glove. Like, it seems like a healthy Benintendi would have had a shot at third, and he didn't look like he was considering it. So that kind of spoke to how he's already feeling on the bases. They did kind of come out with day-to-day right away that, you know, when usually it's something that they're really considering an IL for. They give you kind of the undergoing further evaluation line. So I saw Benintendi getting dressed and obviously heading out to the road trip. So any indication that it would be something significant is not there yet. Obviously, it could linger and then become something like that. Certainly with calf and, you know, the fact that you already went on the IL for the adductor thing, maybe they'd be cautious again, but certainly not anything that's kind of like auto putting him out for any length of time.
Back to Caro real quick. He is now batting 340 with a 446 on base percentage and slugging 404. And as we mentioned in our last podcast, when we recapped the month of April, James, it's so nice to see a White Sox rookie hit the ground running like Caro has. Like, this is where I'm hoping it builds some confidence within the White Sox fan base that the White Sox can develop some hitters. I don't know if Caro's always going to hit 340, and I'm sure a hitting slump is coming, but it is nice to see a White Sox prospect do well right away, especially when some of the other hitting prospects like Colson Montgomery are struggling this year.
Yeah. One, you can just give credit to the organization. Like, it's good to have good players who they're the ones actually capable of playing well when they arrive. And, you know, maybe that just speaks to what they've loaded up on prospects, like finally seeing some results of, you know, being very, very bad, you know, for the third year in a row. But I think it speaks to kind of like the type of hitters that Mydroth and Caro are, where their approach and hit tool are pretty mature, like right out of the gate. It's more of a question really with both, like how much power you'll see. I think, you know, Mydroth's a little bit more extremely tilted towards the, you know, contact and patience end than Caro. And Caro is probably a higher floor for power, but it's both like, is Caro going to be a guy who regularly hits 15 plus home runs like he was in the minors, or is he more going to be 8 to 12, like, you know, his, you know, his pure exit velocity and kind of what his approach is just, he really, watch him like every day, you see like this is a guy who's hitting for average, he's searching for his base hits, he's not like getting off like A swings really multiple times in an at bat. He pretty quickly starts adapting to his situation, and he's really like oriented in this way where the power is going to have to come very organically because he's not chasing it. And that's to his credit because it really works for him, but it also kind of drives home, like, he's not going to be hitting that max exit velocity like every time, cause he's not really just like swinging for it. So you do kind of wonder until he starts getting hot and showing the power, just how exactly it will look at the major league level. Whereas my drop was just very much still in the process of like, will he hit home runs in this level, or will he just be a contact guy? Remains to be seen. But, you know, it's encouraging that they're able to kind of tread water just doing what they're known to be doing alone without even that hitting yet. That's going to come down a little bit. They're not just all going to like hit 300 for the whole time, but it's a good start. It's encouraging.
Josh Rojas made his debut with the Chicago White Sox on Sunday. Kind of a surprise that the White Sox made that announcement on Sunday. A lot of transactions that the White Sox made. Rojas, in his debut with the White Sox, went 0-for-2. He did draw a bases-loaded walk, so he picks up an RBI there. With Rojas now back, James, what's the plan for the White Sox? Have they shared with you their thought process on how they will use Josh Rojas?
Really, all three spots. Probably least bullish on him playing shortstop. It certainly seems like that's kind of their way to play Chase Mydroth, which seems like a pretty much everyday thing right now. And I think things are more oriented towards taking games away from Lenny and Sosa and having games where he pushes Vargas to first and Vaughn DHs. And certainly if Benintendi is out, that's probably a alignment they could go to a lot because they don't have Benintendi like mixing to that DH mix as well. So they can probably pretty liberally sprinkle Andrew Vaughn into it. I know it's not the solution that everyone wants to hear at this particular moment in time, but I think it's the logical way they would play this out based on how they've been doing it so far. So I think he's going to play a lot of second and third. He's probably going to sit versus every lefty because they kind of have a lot of infielders in the mix that they want to at least use occasionally. Like if Jake Amaya is ever going to start, that would probably be against the lefty. But this was somebody who was supposed to stabilize the infield and be like play 5 out of 7 games type of regular. So I think you're going to see him a lot. And probably if he gets going, someone who could be like an on-base guy at the top of the order, and certainly kind of maybe split up the right-handed bats at the top of the order as well, since they've been pushing Benintendi up to do it. But again, if he misses any handful of games, that might be something that Rojas slides into.
So we could have a future debate with the Leninites and whoever is left defending Vaughn on who really should be getting DH at bats between Andrew Vaughn and Lenin Sosa.
Lenin came up big on Sunday, but I was doing like a 15 game spread for him when I was talking about Rojas getting back in the preview. I was like, no walks in this time. That's interesting. Not unexpected, but it's not maybe the step forward we wanted. And
no,
I think you put Lenin in lineup hoping he's going to hit. They're going to be defensive foibles. I think he's generally been better and maybe less overstretched. Certainly playing a lot more first base this year, but there have been some Lenin defensive moments that make it clear that Rojas would, at least if he plays his reputation, would be an upgrade you would see to the common viewer. So, he's got to bash his way into the lineup more than ever going forward.
Okay. All right. So there you go, Leninites. You can now have your debate about who should be the White Sox DH, Andrew Vaughn or Lenin Sosa. This could even get cloudier with the roster because Mike Tauchman and Austin Slater, we could throw Corey Lee in the mix, James. They could be returning to the White Sox in a couple of weeks. So how do you foresee all four of these veterans, when you include Josh Rojas, their playing time and what their true roles are with the White Sox? It made sense when they signed all these guys and traded for them. Let's buy time for our prospects. That plan didn't come to fruition. And now you have some of these younger guys getting everyday playing time. And in a season searching for answers, it probably makes more sense for them to continue getting that playing time. So if the veterans do come back, how do you foresee this working out with the White Sox?
So Corey Lee's probably playing. Corey Lee looked like he was heading out for a rehab, and the talk around him is that he was going out for a rehab assignment this week. The max could probably, like, I think the signs have been kind of already indicated that they would roll with Caro and Tice. They're certainly not going to send Caro back down. And I think they made it clear they prefer Tice to Lee. So I think there's no reason to rush it. They can max out Corey Lee's rehab time down there. But they also have an option to send him back down there. Like, I think he's very useful depth. I think anyone would be probably happy to have someone as toolsy as Corey Lee as a third catcher. That's probably not where Corey Lee would want to be. And it is catching. People go down all the time. There's very foreseeable that somebody needs an IL stint and Corey Lee slides in and comes back for his rehab assignment, and we never have to cross that bridge where he finds out they use his last option, or he finds out really that he is the number three catcher. We're not there yet, but I think ideally that's all the more reason I think they keep Corey Lee in AAA, because if you want to avoid injury forcing you to make a 40-man move and add Narvaez, and certainly rushing Kyle Teal, it's just easier to keep Corey Lee, probably better. Tauchman and Slater, I would say, sound like they're probably maybe another week from going rehab. Like, I would say 2 more weeks from now was what the timeline was supposed to be for both of them. Right now, you're playing Josh Palacios a lot. I think that's pretty clearly like Mike Tauchman's roster spot. He'd probably be more regular in batting near the top, which Palacios has done plenty of. And he probably would play against lefties against Palacios, which, Venable's been pretty straight on. Like, I think Palacios went left on left like once or twice, but he's a big feature of like Venable managing, which I don't know if it's just this roster or not. It's just like tons of subs, like everyone's situational, like because so many players are kind of very limited in the matchups that they're effective in. He's swapping a ton. He's pinch running a lot. So Austin Slater, I think realistically you can maybe attribute Brooks Baldwin kind of making the team to Tauchman not being ready. And I think his role is beyond that. But if you have both Slater and Tauchman, probably going to continue to carry Michael A. Taylor, that could be a situation where it kind of puts Brooks Baldwin up against like Lenin Sosa as far as like who they're going to carry on the roster. And I think Brooks has been pretty solid, but obviously not like a finished product. They could kind of go either way there, because if you, pick him over Lenin, he's more versatile. I think he's a better bet long term. Lundin is out of options and you basically have to DFA him, whereas you can keep Baldwin in house by optioning him, even if it feels a little silly to not have him on the team because he's probably one of their 26 best players. And you can just wait until the next opportunity where you probably will need Brooks Baldwin at some other point in the season. Or you could just be like, Brooks is a big leaguer. He's earned it. He's one of our more reliable, more versatile hitters, at least. And more, we're not going to play Lenine at second. Like, he's not going to be a regular. Let's just move on. Like, we've tried this out a few times. That could happen, but I think they've been more, we'll see. I think they've been more conservative. I think that the general roster hoarding method would be to option Brooks, but so far down the road where there's so many things that could happen where that's not a necessity. Who's the fourth guy?
We got Talkman, Slater, Corey Lee, and Rojas, which we already talked about.
Rojas is here. Right. Okay. Yeah. Yes. I was like, God, do I have to factor for a fourth guy? I don't even know who would go down in that case.
Well, the end game, or I should say the end goal for all four of these guys, is it to be showcased in maybe trades before the deadline? Like Josh Rojas, when he joined the team today, other season ticket holders, our friends from the 108, I was having a conversation with Beef Loaf, and I told Beef, like, the White Sox should trade Rojas to the Cubs. Because the Cubs are now using Nicky Lopez at third base. I like Josh Rojas a lot more than Nicky Lopez. I don't know if you're going to get a big boost offensively over Lopez with Josh Rojas. Maybe I wouldn't say it's a gigantic boost, but the Cubs clearly have a need at third base. So that's already like one trade idea that I have with Josh Rojas. I don't know other trade destinations that make sense for Talkman, Slater, or even Lee, but would that be the end goal with these veterans, James, is for Chris Getz to showcase them before the July deadline?
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't want to boil down like the meaning to signing any veteran ever to just what you get for them for trade, but sure, I would expect pretty much everyone to be available. I think they find, like, I think watching the team every day, we can see the benefit of just having stability, of not putting someone who's not ready for the assignment, like, in position, or just winning games and not feeling like this is the worst environment ever and they're just getting torched all the time, so nothing really feels good developmentally, and just avoiding losing 121 games. I think they all serve that purpose. And even guys like Rojas is very like bought into some of the things Will Venable is preaching about, pre-pitch movement and defensive setups that he wants like everyone to be locked in on. Like, Rojas can give you like a 20-minute like treatise on like why it's so important. So like having people, and Talkman is very like locked into the kind of better at bat nature you're seeing across the board, you know, with some notable slumping exceptions. They're just a much more patient lineup this year. Like, they can't do as very much with it, but facing, like, I thought Lance McCullers was like such a great litmus test, because like that was someone who regularly ran double digit walk rates, even when he was really good, like just threw so many breaking balls and he couldn't be in the zone very often. Like, patient teams could really make him work, but he just demolished the 2021 lineup in the ALDS because they were like the best matchup possible for him. They would chase sliders whenever. So seeing him like run up, obviously first start in like 3 years and, you know, all the rust that comes with that, but to see him, them, they didn't even score, but like they ran him up to like north of 80 pitches, like in the fourth inning where he can't even complete it. And they drew more walks and strikeouts. Like, theoretically, these, you know, Rojas is, you know, a good OBP guy in that form. You know, Slater has a decent approach. Like, bringing these guys on who consistently execute these type of bats you want has some benefit outside of, yeah, they're on 1 year deals. They'll all be pretty cheap. So even if they're not a big upgrade, other teams will take them because it's not a salary component to it. If any of them are in working order, basically a Martin Perez situation is the only thing that really is stopping them from being available at the deadline. So yeah, that's the end goal, but there's stuff they can do that hopefully is meaningful down the road, beyond that.
Well, let's move over to the pitching side for the White Sox. Caleb Freeman joins the Chicago White Sox bullpen. How can Freeman help the White Sox, James?
he was very happy to be here. But Brooke Fletcher asked him a question. Like, he's giving lots of like fun, basically one sentence answers. They were very folksy. And it's like, what do you want White Sox fans to know that you bring to the ball club? And he said, I don't know. Hopefully some zeros. How about that? So that's, I guess, what hopefully you can bring. This was a guy who was a major league invite back in 2022. Like, this was someone that they had tabbed even the previous administration. Our baseball team's administration is just presidents.
But let's just go with it. Yeah, we'll go with it.
He had been tabbed as like, this is like, we think we're going to be an internally developed reliever. Like, we think this guy's going to pop and like debut this year. And, you know, he had awful control problems that year. I think he was, you know, hurt. He referenced kind of like shoulder being a thing in the past. And it's had two stints on the development list at different minor league affiliates the last couple of years. Like, gone through all sorts of struggles, but is now back. He's been healthy. He's been really good at Charlotte. I think it's 12-1 strikeout ratio and 10 1/3 innings. He's back to throwing like 95-98. He's throwing this 87 and out 90-mile-hour, probably a slider, but it's getting tagged as a cutter that has like an absurd miss rate on it right now. I want to say it was like 47%. So he's throwing pretty hard and pretty good. Obviously we've seen his command go up and down in his career, but could just be like, if he feels healthy, he's right. It's hard to pitch in Charlotte, and he was doing pretty good at it. If his stuff is kind of popping right now, this is someone who's supposed to have leverage potential. So obviously he could rise pretty quick if he proves himself in this situation. Certainly need more power stuff in this bullpen and on the pitching staff in general. So I think kind of seeing what the hot hand is about for somebody who was hard throwing, but, you know, had some trouble getting lined up for a while. Sounds like just what the doctor ordered. I hope it's going to be a little bit of a contrast from Ben Murphy, but hopefully it sticks.
Yeah, it didn't work out for good old Murph Dog, and my prediction that he would lead the White Sox in saves, not going to come to fruition for me.
Just get an option. They have to DFA him. He could come back.
He could come back. Maybe
just a tweak away.
Could come back. I don't think they'll ever use him in a save situation, though, but he pitched in a lot of games, and not some great outings from Penn Murphy for the White Sox, and obviously, injuries are going to be a factor, but with this type of shuffle, optioning Penn Murphy and bringing up Caleb Freeman in the upcoming weeks and definitely months, but in the upcoming weeks in the rest of this month of May, James, are we going to see more bullpen shuffling from Chris Getz? Where, all right, we gave this guy 6 weeks, we're not seeing a lot of progress. You go to Charlotte. Let's take a hot hand from Charlotte or maybe even from Birmingham and let's see what they got in the major leagues.
I actually undersold Caleb Freeman's mix rate. It's 57.7% on that pitch. Or obviously 1 month, but pretty nuts. I think so. I think you're definitely at the cutoff for where you can start saying like, all right, this is someone we thought well of, but this is a reasonable sample of them not performing. And I think Murphy was kind of there. And I think you're seeing a little bit of marshaling resources a bit. One, like Sergio Sanchez kind of, when I talked to him the other week, he pointed at Freeman and also Addison Coffey as someone he thought was, some guys he thought were performing to the level where, you know, the next time they're calling for a reliever that they would credibly be options. And obviously Freeman getting called up. So Coffey, we got to come by it. Notably, they promoted Wickelman Gonzalez to Charlotte, which came alongside word from Paul Janisch that he is moving to the bullpen. You know, his first stint was going to be multi-inning. He threw two innings his first time out, said there could be three innings in there, but I think that would take a little longer. I think it's more of a second half consideration, especially since Wickelman's control and the rotation kind of merited moving him to the bullpen if that was something they were thinking about. So that could get some time before we see kind of the benefits of that really show up. But it's pretty plain, like, they traded for a guy who was into his section option year. They don't have this super long clock to development as a starter. They would rather see what he can do, get him established in the majors this year so they don't have to use his last option year next year necessarily. So I think if he performs, he's someone that you can see up. They definitely want to get value out of that trade, and developing Wickelman, having him be a breakout reliever would be part of that. And I think Peyton Pallett in Double A, also because he hasn't pitched in Triple A yet, he'd be a bit longer view, but it's starting to come around after a rocky start where I think you probably see him in Charlotte, I don't know, by June. So I think they're kind of slowly moving their pieces together as far as like candidates kind of mounting up. And I'm struggling to think of someone who's probably on the same level of struggling as Murphy. I think they view kind of their lefty relievers as like interchangeable for each other, though now Ellert going down for how long, I don't know. If Eisert and Schuster struggle at any point, there could be someone that they swap out. They don't need as many lefty relievers as they do have, even without Ellert. But I don't think anyone quite is in that same spot as Murphy was, but if anyone goes down for any period of time, since that happens to relievers a lot, or if Leisure's having fastball issues. I did talk to Ethan Katz the other day about, his giving him a running version of his fastball just to get hitters a little bit off of what's been happening, because like his last two homers are on like theoretically perfect spots for Jordan Leisure to throw his fastball and getting taken out. And some of it's bad luck, but also it's, yeah, people kind of know what they're hunting with him a little bit, and so trying to add a little variance in him. But I think shuffling could happen. The best candidates, I really think, are maybe a month away from really like emerging.
Got it. Okay, well, something to pay attention to when Jim is writing up his minor keys for SoxMachine.com. How are Charlotte's relievers doing? Because those are going to be some new faces that we're going to be seeing joining the White Sox. Jared Schuster, the joke that was made in the stands after Penn Murphy was struggling, that Schuster is lefty Murphy. So there you go. There's Penn Murphy, who's been option, and then Jared lefty Murphy Schuster, as Jared is struggling.
Jared Schuster has a new change of grip. He has added 8 or 9 inches of drop, and it was like getting insane whiff rates in Charlotte. Ethan Katz called it elite. Now he's still, the rest of his arsenal is not elite. He's like many, many White Sox pitchers who has like underwhelming fastball, secondaries that can spin, breaking balls that come and go, and then like a great changeup and trying to like make that work. But they at least feel that Schuster is a bit more viable than what we saw last year, who was, kind of a pure up and down guy. So
yeah. Okay.
To be seen. He obviously got knocked around like I think his last time out. So, but we'll see.
Well, the White Sox are 3-1 in the month of May. Again, if you listen to our previous podcast, the White Sox were 5-21 in the month of April. So great start for the White Sox in the month of May. They win their second series of the season, upsetting the Houston Astros. So the vibes are good as the Chicago White Sox now travel on the road to Kansas City for a 4-game series. The Royals are red hot. They are 19-16 on the season. They're 3 games back of the Detroit Tigers in the American League Central, currently in third place because Cleveland's also playing really good baseball too. The Royals have won their last 2 games. They are 8-10 in their last 10, and they have been very good at Kauffman Stadium. The Royals are 11-5 at home. This is a 4-game series starting on Cinco de Mayo, Monday night, 6:40 p.m. Central Time. Shane Smith will take the ball for the White Sox against Cole Reagans. On Tuesday night, also 6:40 p.m. Central Time, Sean Burke against Seth Lugo. And Wednesday at 6:40 p.m. Central Time, it's Jonathan Cannon against Michael Wacha. Thursday, getaway day, Davis Martin, the Dart, will face Chris Bubich. The lefty, who's been pitching very well for the Royals this year, has been one of the surprising stories for Kansas City. But when it comes to White Sox and Royals, James, some way, somehow, Ethan Katz, Brian Bannister, Walker McKibben, Will Venable, they have to figure out what ways can we get Bobby Witt Jr. out? Because last year in 13 games, Bobby Witt Jr. hit .469 and got on base at a clip of .519 and slugging .653. Used to be Salvador Perez killed the White Sox. Lorenzo Cain was a pain in the ass for the White Sox. James, this is on another level. Like, Bobby Witt Jr. owned the White Sox last year. So any ideas on how the White Sox can get Bobby Witt Jr. out?
I think unlike previous years, you know, Tice doesn't have the biggest arm. Edgar Caro is certainly getting tested a lot, but I think they've been pretty good in their operation on controlling the running game this year, at least responding to the challenges. So I think the method is to bean Bobby Witt every single time and then, you know, go to war on the base pass. Like, yeah, it's a little strength for him, but he can't circle the bases. I think it's the path. They don't have very good stuff as a team. They're pitching very well, considering that they have very poor stuff. Like,
you're talking about the White Sox not having
the good models stuff, do right? not like them. The stuff they're doing. I think if there's a success story on the White Sox, it usually involves pitching above their peripherals. And it's to their credit they're doing that. It's to their credit with the defense performing behind them that they set up and supported like a weak contact team pretty well. I don't know if it'll work all season. That would be really impressive and open for praise. But as far as like facing somebody with the bat speed where even if you fool him a little bit, he can recover, that's not something they're really accustomed. They're not acquitted to be able to handle that. I think they'll. Any situation where they have to throw a fastball and a fastball count to Bobby Witt, it's going to be a very bad time. I think there's not necessarily a type of pitcher who's more successful against him, but I think having no ability to overwhelm him whatsoever, having to constantly try to fool him with changeups, which sometimes he adjusts mid-flight and still does, you know, who was that he hit the grand slam off of the other day or last year? Where you like adjusted on like a breaking ball or off speed pitch, like mid flight and rip the White Sox throat out. I don't like this matchup for them. I don't like, obviously injuring him would be bad. Like, you know, throw, you know, towards the buttocks. Like don't make a sport of this, but I think just avoid maximum damage. You have a real chance of keeping him from extra bases if you put him on first by force, opposed to letting him hit a ball and then he can run wherever it might go over the fence. I think he can't steal. He probably won't steal home. Even if he steals like two bases, it took him time. Probably distracted their hitter a little bit. I think it's the better way to go. Just put him on.
Bobby Witt Jr. this year sitting 306 with a 379 on base percentage and slugging 493. Michael Garcia, the third baseman for the Royals, is having a good season. He's batting 319 with a 496 slugging percentage. His OPS is 875. Bobby Witt Jr. already has 13 doubles this year, and Michael Garcia has 4 homers and 9 doubles. Salvador Perez only has 2 home runs, but he's got 11 doubles. That's kind of a surprising stat. And Vinny Bascuitino leads the Royals in home runs with 6. The big story, though, last year for the Royals was the starting pitching. And Cole Reagans has the best stuff. He's got 46 strikeouts in 30 and two-thirds innings. He's only allowed 9 walks. His ERA is 4.40. That's the worst of the group. Michael Lorenzen's been pitching well for the Royals. Seth Lugo's been pitching well. Michael Wacha. But Chris Bubich, this is the guy I'm going to be paying attention to on Thursday, James, on getaway day. 7 starts for Bubich, a 1.98 ERA over 41 innings. And are we to a point that we have to give a cap tip to the Royals and how they're working their starting staff? Because last year, including myself, it felt a little fluky. And how successful the Royals starting pitching has been. Here we are at the beginning of 2025, and it seems to be continuing from their success last year. And Cole Reagans is not even on his A game.
As a someone who owns Cole Reagans and Michael Wacha in fantasy, I feel like it still has been a little fluky at times this year. But yeah, I was listening to an interview Chris Bubich did on the Cespedes podcast, and he was talking about like basically when they cleaned house a couple years ago and brought in like new pitching devs, like things kind of changed the game for him. And that really happened like while he was it happened during the time where he was rehabbing, where it took a little longer window for people to see the results of like how much they had kind of changed his arsenal until he came back from TJ, and it kind of snuck up on people. So yeah, I think the way that their best, like the way that like Seth Lugo certainly gets things done feels very like old school org, but the larger success kind of shows that they've taken a real turn for making this division even more competitive in their kind of pitching development than it already is with what Detroit's been able to do recently and with Chris Fetter and obviously what Cleveland's done very regularly. So yeah, there's no juggernaut financial might in this division, but there's not a there's no like dumb team that we all like talk about and bully because if you look around and you can't find them, maybe it's you. Obviously the White Sox taking strides, but they're probably the straggler trying to get up to the pack in this division.
Yeah, you make a good point. This is a great segue to what's catching our attention around Major League Baseball, because that is one of the things that I notice when looking at the standings every day, James. Detroit, Cleveland, and Kansas City, they're playing really good baseball. And it's not like they have faced the White Sox a ton to start this season. They are beating good teams. Like these three, I know the American League is down, and that's the big topic right now through the national shows, is the National League is so much better than the American League. You're absolutely right. We said that. Everybody said that before the season started. So that's really nothing new. But I am impressed in how the top of the American League Central right now is playing with Detroit, Cleveland, Kansas City. And this is why Minnesota is really in hot water at this moment, because if the White Sox continue having a stronger May and the Twins stumble a little bit, the Twins might be closer to the White Sox in the standings than Detroit, Cleveland, and Kansas City. So at least if you look at the American League Central and watching these division games, the White Sox have a lot more division games coming up, James. Could be a lot more entertaining, and the White Sox seriously could be a spoiler in how this race works out.
I guess that's their option.
Well, yeah.
We haven't necessarily seen them playing those teams a lot better or tougher yet. But I would think those shouldn't be the matchups where they get overwhelmed. I mean, any more than any matchup they have, they get overwhelmed by talent. I don't think anybody other than Bobby Witt's nuclear mode is really equipped to blow them off the field in some way. They're all clearly better than them, but there's not like any team where it's like, oh, we don't know how to get Aaron Judge out, except Bobby Witt, of course. Or, a pitching staff where it'd feel like them facing the Phillies in April of last year did. I don't think that exists in the division. So I'm still kind of pulling my head out of the idea that, all right, it does seem like they're not going to set the record for losses again this year. But you can squint and see, if they're taking better at bats, if they're getting healthier, maybe they're going to be a bit more offensively viable and they do keep people trouble. At the same time, you kind of feel like the pitching's been a little bit over their skis to be as, decent as it's been. So I can see how it would fall apart and they are doormats again, or I can see how like they continue to do a little bit better than how they started and, be relevant at least, or at least provide one or two, like, we really blew it when we lost that series of the White Sox in August, moment for a contending team, which I think it's always fun to be on the other side of, so we'll see.
Well, the White Sox are 7-11 at home this year. The White Sox are just 4.5 games back of the Twins. The Twins are 4 games back of the Royals for third place. So what I just said about the Twin situation holds water because the Twins are already 7 games back of the Tigers. In the AL Central, it's Detroit 22-13, Cleveland's 20-14, and like I mentioned, Kansas City is 19-16 with 4 games against the White Sox. So let's zoom out outside of the American League Central, outside of the White Sox, like we typically do for the Monday episodes. What's catching our attention around Major League Baseball? James, what's catching your attention?
I hope I don't steal yours, but Donnie Eckert getting fired. Like
I didn't have
someone
that.
who's interviewed for the White Sox job. not too long ago, I was in Spain and enjoying life, and Donnie Ecker was interviewing for the manager gig. Obviously, it's a little like, what's the rhyme or reason to hitting coaches getting fired? It just happens. They're a team that's supposed to be trying to win that division, trying to maximize the, all the money they put out for Corey Seager and whatnot, and they're not hitting. It's a measure you do, but at the same time, like, this was a guy given a lot of power, and I think like there's a little bit of like divisive like look at him about like whether he's kind of a genius who really like spearheaded like the 2023 offense, like running the World Series, or is it more of like he's just another hitting coach and is not really worthy of this like big like fancy offensive coordinator title they gave him. But he's someone who I think got recommended by other people in the White Sox organization who liked him to interview for the manager job, and the White Sox have hired other people who didn't get the manager job and interviewed for it and they liked. So it's interesting that he's available now. I don't know if anything is going to happen, but it obviously caught our eyes because we were, confirming that he was part of the interview
Yeah.
list not that long ago. So just interesting. Not saying anything's
Man.
going to happen, just noticing, just me noticing.
Got it. So he's going to be Ryan Fuller's assistant. That's what you're saying?
I don't know who do you give the fancier title to? I don't know. Maybe that's why he wouldn't come, because you got Ryan Fuller already. You already hired your Bannister.
Yeah. The thing that's catching my attention, and it's been talked about a lot, especially the national shows, especially out east. But it is remarkable on May 4th to talk about a hitter hitting 423. But that hitter is Aaron Judge, James. And I wonder, especially in the American League, if we're going to see another Triple Crown season, but this time coming from Aaron Judge. Like, I didn't know that he had this type of contact ability to lead the league in batting average. But so many teams are afraid of him. Like, I knew that he would always pile up walks, especially with guys on base, because they don't want to allow that three-run homer to Aaron Judge. The slugging's always going to be there. I mean, he's already had multiple 60 home run seasons. But now unlocking this last aspect of him as a hitter, being able to still hit for this level of contact while still annihilating the baseball. This could be a really special season that we are about to be watching with Aaron Judge in 2025, and he's already a special player. But I feel like in a month, we're going to hear a lot, especially out of New York, James, about the Triple Crown watch for Aaron Judge, because this is a phenomenal start that he's on.
Is he leading the league in RBIs?
I don't think he is. I think Peter Alonso is up there.
So they moved, like, he's been hitting second recently, and because they had been batting him third, but Jazz Chisholm was hurt, so I doubt they move him out of second. I know that's like the good place to put the best hitter in the world. I'm not saying
Yeah.
they should move him down if they specifically had the goal of having him win the Triple Crown. It probably like in terms of, like, if your goal was not to win baseball games but to accumulate RBI for Aaron Judge, it'd probably be better for him to hit third or fourth, but we'll see. He's walking and striking out less than ever. Like, he just decided he wanted to swing.
Yeah.
Maybe because they're batting him lead off so much, maybe because he was tired of walking. But he's decided to become like a seven hit tool guy instead of a six hit tool guy, because he's bored or something like that. Or this is just what happens when you stop making him play center field. I don't think he'll hit 400, but I'm not scared of him hitting 400 yet. But I don't know. I'm talking myself into the fact that he will not hit 400, and I should not worry about it. But it's a thought I'm having.
Yeah, Teoscar Hernandez, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Peter Alonso's got 31 RBIs this season. He's second. Teoscar Hernandez and Aaron Judge are tied for the league lead with 33 RBIs apiece. That what a great signing by the Dodgers. That's really working out for them. I was wondering if the White Sox should go after someone like Teoscar Hernandez. I'm sure he wouldn't have this level of success like he's having with the White Sox, but he's been really good. Wilmer Flores is the outlier here. And the RBI total, he's got 31 RBIs this year. and Kyle Tucker already gaining a lot of steam, especially in Chicago. Cubs fans wanting Kyle Tucker to sign an extension. He has 9 homers and 30 RBIs this year. Let's see where Pete Armstrong is in a month. This is a big surprise in how well he's doing offensively.
I told Tom Fanelli I thought Wilmer was toast, so now he texts me every time he does anything. Rub it in my face.
And Cal Raleigh for the Seattle Mariners is leading the league in home runs. He's got 12. Judge has got 11, and Schwarber has 11 as well. And then on the doubles front, like I mentioned, Bobby Witt Jr. leading the league along with Alex Bregman and Peter Alonso. Alonso's really enjoying hitting behind both Juan Soto and Francisco Lindor. So those are your leaders around Major League Baseball. And let us know in the comments section what's catching your guys' attention around MLB. But that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can also watch and listen to the podcast on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. We're going to do a little bit more video content. If you go and subscribe to our channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine, we just uploaded a new short. James got a chance to chat with Tim Elko and asking Tim about the adjustments that he made during this offseason. So you can enjoy that YouTube short, or you can follow us on social media. We're on all the platforms at Sox Machine. You can follow James Fegan at JR Fegan. You can follow me at Sox Machine _Josh. If you enjoy our work and you want full access to Sox Machine, go to SoxMachine.com and sign up for a subscription. Monthly plans start at $5. You get an ad-free version of both the show and the website. We also have additional tiers of support that unlock additional benefits. You can also get subscriptions, and you get a discount when you sign up for an annual subscription. Again, visit SoxMachine.com to sign up today. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.